Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
John and Dave. Vanilla Cherry.
Johnny, he's Johnny. Johnny, he's ticklish, giggling.
Especially
Johnny.
When I'm being tickled by Dave.
John, taking care of your health isn't always easy.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Look, I'm going to try to finish this. But it Sorry. Should at least be simple.
That's what I was going to say, too.
That's why, for the last few years, John, I'm going to speak for you here. John and I have been drinking AG1 every
See?
Day. No
That's
exceptions. Right. It's just one scoop mixed in water
once a day.
Every day. And it makes us feel energized, focused, and tell them.
Ready to take on the day. Is that what you were going to say?
Yep.
Dave,
exactly what I was gonna say.
Two words.
Yeah.
Same page. Okay. And that's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics. Got to have them both. Mm-hmm. And more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
John, how do you know for sure AG1 is a quality product?
Oh, my. There are a myriad of ways.
Wow.
Okay, but let me just start off by saying, Dave, I know with AG1, I'm giving my body high-quality nutrition.
Okay.
One. Okay, every batch of AG1 goes through a rigorous testing process.
Okay.
It's kind of like the process that you had me go through to see if I could be your co-host. So you know it's safe, just like you know I'm safe now. And AG1's ingredients are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. Now, I've got a question for you, Dave.
Yeah, have at it.
Okay. How does AG1 simplify your own
John,
daily
always knew
routine?
You were going to ask. I feel like healthy aging shouldn't feel complicated. Mm-mm. The thought of taking so many different pills and supplements sounds exhausting.
No, I'm tired.
But with just one daily scoop of AG1, my nutrient gaps are covered and my mental and physical health is supported with no hassle. Mm-hmm. In only 60 seconds every morning, I know I'm giving my body what it needs and setting up sustainable habits for the long run.
See, I can do it in like 48
my name was
seconds.
The Eagles. That's a music joke, John.
Look, if there's one product we had to recommend to elevate your health,
yeah,
what is it, Dave?
It's AG1.
AG1, of course. If you didn't see that coming, then you're not paying attention. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long.
So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/dadville. Tell them what it is, John.
It's drinkag1.com/dadville. Check it out.
Okay, folks, here we are again.
I'm here with you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I realized when I was saying that. That's what it was. We have EC, as we call him, Elliot Cherry.
Hello.
One of our, John and I's dear friends. We felt like we needed someone. John said, I want my pastor to be here for this. He specifically said that.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And that hurt.
And Dave couldn't say that about me.
Well, Dave was like, I'm here. And then we had to have a long conversation about...
Dave, you've misunderstood our relationship for
the past 20 years. I see you as more of the associate youth pastor.
Oh, bro, that is me all day long.
Uh-huh.
All day long.
Mm. You're filling water balloons.
Yeah, I'm having
fun,
man.
You know, ordering pizza.
Why is he crying in the closet? Leave him in here. He'll be fine.
How many times since Dave has become an elder has he let you know that?
Oh, I mean, it's the password at the door.
He gets to mouth it through the window.
You're an elder. You're my elder.
And say, and pastor. Associate youth pastor. So what we're doing today, this is our part 2 on work. And we felt like we needed to have someone that would be a little
more well-informed, potentially, than John and I.
Part one was just us.
Just guys riffing.
Just two lost Cal riffing souls.
If I'm, you know, I'm not speaking personally, but if I haven't listened to the previous episode, could you speak to the people who, maybe what they miss on that episode?
No one listening right now missed that episode. Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, there's... Yeah.
They're caught up.
They're way caught up.
So what you're
up.
Saying is that when people find out that I'm the guest, there's no way that you'll get an additional, like, you won't get one additional listener that didn't listen.
There's going to be a spike. There's
I'm guessing you'll listen.
Maybe Britta. Like, we'll get, like, a couple. And then you'll give it to one of your kids.
My
and be
kids,
like,
yeah.
I need
you'll
you
get five, at least five new listens from my kids.
Yeah. Five and counting.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Because you're five now. Since we've seen you last... Since you were on Dadville.
That's right. That's right. We did have a baby.
Yeah. So you're five.
No. We talked about five. I just had the fifth.
Had you really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Because the title of the episode, thanks for remembering, was, I listened to it every week, was the hardest part about having five kids is the other four.
Oh. Yeah. Is that really the title? That's a great title.
Yeah.
That is a great title.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Jason
said. I said it. Yeah, but I said it.
Oh. Yeah. Did you really?
I did.
Oh. Don't do this. You don't start with bragging. God hates that.
Well, last time I didn't get a brag sheet, because I know you do that for all your... So I was hoping that on this...
we just went through the brag sheet.
All that's on your brag sheet is one really funny quote. You made up.
That I didn't have last time I was here.
He once gave us the title for a Dadville podcast that he was on. Okay, so what we wanted to do today is talk a little more about work. And I think, you know, John and I talked about this for a while. Like, what are the things... Where could this conversation go? Because obviously, and I want to say a couple things to start the whole thing. One, a lot of this is pontification, riffing, hypothetical things. I'm speaking for myself. I'm not saying anything that I'm 100% sure about. So I don't want anybody to hear. This is me, the three of us, you know, talking about things that are hard, that are beautiful about it, struggles we all have.
Yep.
You know, guesses maybe that other men specifically would have. I can't obviously speak at all for how women deal with this. So
Dadville.
It's Dadville. So one would be, I want to be really clear because I don't want people to send, you know, I mean, I've never gotten a mean, email from anybody that listens to Dadville, but.
I screen those.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Let's move on.
You didn't get the ones that I sent.
I didn't see this going this way. I think so. One, you know, just have some grace as we're all talking about these things. Two, and to your point, Elliot, this we will be talking about guys. So I don't want to be any moms that listen, which we obviously love. I don't want them going like, "Well, I can't relate to that," or that's not a fair universal statement. Anything that I specifically say that feels like a universal statement would only be a guy oriented, man oriented. So that's too big because I just really don't want this to get misconstrued when it's like. Somebody's listening like, well, I can't relate to that, or why would you say that? So that said, okay, so I think the place that we're going to start, I think about it in three ways, and we'll cover those as we go through this. First thing I think it'd be fun to talk about and interesting to talk about is the idea in work of sort of what I call the comparison and capacity.
And as a pastor, you probably love that alliteration.
I do.
Yeah, I did that. No, I did that for you, really. Yeah.
Sorry, just to clarify, did you say comparison in capacity
and
capacity? Okay.
Different things, but sort of live somewhat in the same thing.
Yeah.
I think when I think about work, when I think about my life, those two things are really tricky places for me. Because I think, one, the ever constant noise in the back of my head, which is like she band, either three of those, is doing a thing that's better than me. More people came to their shows. There's more listeners on Spotify. Back in the day, more albums sold.
We talked about this right before your Christmas show when I saw you at the Belmont basketball game. We talked about like how many tickets were left and all that
exactly.
kind of stuff.
Yeah, because you ribbed me about that. But like, you know, I think, so one, comparison is just such a tricky thing, right? Like, and I think, I would imagine most people, men, deal with this in some work setting, right? Like either your boss and that's where you want to get, or the guy that just got hired, woman that just got hired is doing better, whatever, right?
Right.
So whatever. Or you know, you just see a friend, you're like, I want to do what that guy's doing,
right,
that girl's doing. So that's one. And then I think well, let's talk about that first. So when y'all think about comparison in a work setting, like where does your brain go? Like how does that make you feel?
I think that every industry y'all are musicians, artists, writers, pastor here. By the way, as being on here now twice, am I the official Dadville, like pastor of Dadville?
You are.
Theologian of Dadville.
I think we're doing the rounds where you got a call back.
Oh, I got a call back. Okay.
You know what I mean? But
we haven't hired the role yet.
Yeah. Right.
But it's two is good.
I think to your point, like it's a human experience. We're talking about, our experience, but I don't know I've never met someone in the vocation they're in that doesn't have a version of this, which to me makes it a human heart reality, not just, you're really going to struggle with that if you're a musician, but you're not if you're a doctor.
Right, right. Well said, for sure.
So I think that what does that say then about it is that there's something in us that is constantly doing that, and work is potentially, I think work and family are the easiest
metric.
They're the places we live in all the time. So if we are naturally doing that, then those are the places where they play out. Mm. And so I think that it's like, what does it actually say about the heart? What does the comparison give me? Like, what am I getting from it when I do it? Because I'm either getting glory or shame.
Wow.
And so what am I actually thirsty for that's making me do that? Mm. Which says a lot about my job that I'm doing. It's not giving me enough glory, or I feel so much shame. I'm addicted to that shame. And so I'm pursuing more of it to kind of confirm the feeling. So anyway, I can get into specifics on how I do that, but I think that it's important to note that in my line of work, I talk with a lot of people in a lot of different circles, teachers, real estate people, lawyers, musicians, everybody does this. Hmm. And as a pastor, I'm in lots of different pastor circles, really important ones,
Sure.
I just did it. Uh-huh. I did what I did. Yeah. But everybody I talk to has a version of this. So I think it's it's universal is the first thing to note about it is what I would say. What do you got, John?
I mean, I agree with that. I was about to say word for word exactly what you just said, but in a more concise way.
And it would have rhymed probably.
Oh, definitely. It would have had a meter to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's so for anyone, I mean, Dave, you kind of touched on this already, but anyone who's listening right now who does not have a traditional job or a job where you're getting paid or whatever. I mean, comparison is we're comparing ourselves when we're back in elementary school.
Right.
I didn't have the cool starter jacket.
Right.
And I wanted that Charlotte Hornets starter jacket, all that. So this is definitely, this is one of the the most sort of universal fundamental elements of being a human on planet Earth.
I've got a theological question about this that I'll answer. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, obviously.
It's a boomerang.
Do you feel like, this is personal, but I think it's there's theology that plays itself out in this. Do you feel like you compare more in your strengths or in your weaknesses? Do you compare yourself more to people who you feel like, man, I'm really good at this part of my job, and I find myself comparing to people that do this, but maybe I feel like do it better? Or do you feel like the weaknesses of your job and your craft and your vocation, I'm constantly comparing to the things that I don't do and I wish I had that I don't have? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great question that I had written down and asked. Just let me see. Yeah, two questions.
I think it's definitely weakness.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Because when
it's kind of that shame. It's what you said. It's it's a little more shame rooted than it is glory, I think, for me.
So anyway, they just kept coming, and I was like, guys, my hand's gonna fall off here pretty soon.
Well, John, if you enter a tickle contest, that's how it goes.
I know, but it's at a library. I just thought it would be a little more low key.
That's your first mistake. John, can I be honest with you? Can I level with you?
Please.
I need a break.
Okay.
Let's get some coffee.
Ooh. Dave, now I did hear you clearly, but I'm gonna ask anyway. Okay. Did you say coffee?
Yes.
Because
exactly
today's
what I
episode
said.
And my morning cup of Joe, which is kind of like the street term, is brought to you by, let's sing it together.
Okay.
Methodical coffee. We said methodical.
Methodical coffee has craft coffee and tea for people of all kinds. Mm-hmm. All kinds, John. Roasted, blended, brewed, served, and perfected by verified coffee and tea nerds like my friend Johnny John.
That's
here.
Right. That's right. Self-imposed. Yeah. But self-imposed? No, self-declared?
No, it's both, John.
Whatever.
If it's a good day, it's both. Okay?
Now, Dave, methodical has resolved the headache of having too little or too much coffee from your traditional time-based coffee subscription. Right? With methodical, you can subscribe by usage, receive a free smart scale that tracks your coffee consumption and triggers your next right at the perfect time. So you always have just that right amount of coffee on hand, worry-free.
Best part is, John...
Tell me.
You can receive 20% off your first bag and 10% off all subsequent bags. That's
generous. That's my one complaint with them. They're being too generous.
With no code needed when you try the free smart scale.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, we also have, let's remind them, our very own Dadville blend. Everybody. It's the fuel that gets me going.
People listening to this podcast go, you know what would accompany this podcast listening?
Yeah.
Some coffee, but not just any coffee.
Not just any coffee.
Not just methodical coffee.
No. And that, you know, that would be good enough. Yes. But they keep us honest. They're like, no, go to the summit. Go to the mountaintop. Have your own blend.
Gosh.
And fill it with hints of chocolate, graham, and brown sugar.
Oh, my goodness. Methodical is on a mission to connect people to the beauty of life through coffee experiences for people like who, John?
Me.
Well, and everybody listening.
You.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Methodical's been roasting and hosting, doing a classic roast and host for over 9 years, and they offer a wide selection of coffees and teas from dark and roasty to bright and funky. Like who, John?
Just like you.
Just
Dave.
Like me and James Brown.
The roast and host.
Yeah.
On their site, on their website.
Yeah.
Not just the, in case you were listening, you're like, wait, what's the site? I'm talking about website.
Yeah.
You'll also find brew guides that teach you how to turn your coffee brewing chore, which it's not a chore.
It's not a
chore.
But
if you feel like it is, you can turn it into a beloved ritual.
Yeah.
Craft a cup you'll love with methodical coffee. Also, just to reiterate, you get 10% off your first order of coffee or tea with the discount code Dadville.
I don't want to wake you up.
What?
John, I just want to, can I tell you something?
What time is it?
John, listen. Oh. What do you think I'm the most picky about in this world?
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I'm still waking up.
Just answer.
I don't know. How did you get in my house?
Well, I mean, you can be very particular about some things.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe you're a big Oxford comma guy, you know? Always got to do the comma after the and.
Listen, I'm definitely pro-Oxford comma, but that's not it. Keep guessing.
I know. Okay. You don't allow different foods on your plate to touch.
John,
that's kind of
food doesn't have hands. How would they touch? You're wrong again. The thing I'm the most picky about, guess it with me, is
candles.
Yes. Candles.
I should have said that.
So many home candle scents smell unnatural and chemically.
Gross.
And after learning that the candle industry contributes to an insurmountable amount of non-recyclable waste, carbon emissions, and toxicity in our air, I am even more prickly. And picky, John.
And picky.
Yes, give me two words that start with P, and those are the two I'm using.
You can choose both of them. That's fine. Dave, I heard that almost 2 billion candles, that's with a B, are sold globally every year, and almost all of them are likely to end up in landfills for the next million years.
Oh, man.
So what? Here's my question.
Yeah.
What can we possibly do about this?
Notes Candle has the answers. Notes created a refillable candle system that allows you to use your candle vessel again and again, and guess what, John?
Again.
Oh, so you don't become part of the problem. It's so easy to use. The candles are made with fragranced wax beads. And they're wax, John. This is what I want to tell people. They're not wax.
They're not.
It's really great
legit.
Okay? They're awesome. All you do is place the wick in your reusable, John, notes jar.
Okay.
Fill it up with wax beads.
Not wax beads.
John. Enjoy your fragrance for up to 36 hours, and then just do it all over again when you're ready for a new one.
Okay, so if I'm following you, that means that I can switch out fragrances all the time.
Yeah.
Because that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, next question, Dave. Okay. Tell me. Do they have a candle that smells like bougie and luxurious and calming and also warm?
John, that's the Santal and Atlas Cedar candle.
Okay.
Personally, I love the coziest scent imaginable. Sweet, but also a little spicy. Like you, John.
Uh-huh.
So I went with the vanilla and pepperwood.
Ooh.
It's perfect for movie night or just cuddling up on the couch.
I love it. All right, so be a responsible consumer while not giving up on high-quality home fragrance by making the switch to Notes. Make the switch and build a starter kit. Right now, Notes is giving listeners 15% off and free shipping when you buy a Notes starter kit using the code DADBILL at notescandle.com/DADBILL.
That's notescandle.com/DADBILL for 15% off and free shipping. It's wax, not whack.
Yeah. Well, there in the strengths, there is security. And so,
but is there enough security?
I mean, I don't know. I would like to give a tangible example.
Yeah.
If I have just written a song that I feel like is a good song, like the, and this is hard to, you know, it's hard to kind of describe like the list of boxes to check off to achieve this. But you know, I was listening to Rick Rubin. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, where he was talking about art versus entertainment and commerce, mm-hmm. where he was saying like the artist needs to only listen to the artist, and whatever you're creating,
ooh, yeah.
only create. He was actually saying like this is a gift to God, and it can only be, you're only creating what you as the artist can create.
Yeah.
You don't even... never think about the audience.
Yeah.
And then in doing so, you end up doing what's best for the audience.
Right.
He's like, if you're doing something else, it's, if you're thinking about the audience, that's different. That's commerce. That's entertainment. Right. It has its place, but it's not art.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, if I have just written a song that I know in my heart checks those boxes and I'm like, it's done. Mm-hmm. This is the song. Then I can come over here and play it for Dave, and Dave can have his reaction to it.
Right.
But I'm secure in how I feel about the song. But if I, and this has happened, where if I write a song where I'm like, I know that the music's, I feel good about the music to this one. I am insecure about the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm coming to play it for Dave because I want Dave to push me to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And say, no, these lyrics are awesome.
Right.
But I know they're not.
Right.
So that's when
you told a story about this at one of the last shows.
Yeah, this has actually happened.
Yeah, yeah. You told this at City Winery a couple Christmases ago. No, it was when you were doing your Indiana tour. When was that? You played the whole album.
Yeah. I forget when that was, but yeah.
But you told this story.
In the last year, right?
Maybe I think it was it would have been
fall of 2022
or something. Yeah.
But I remember, I mean, I go to a lot of John's shows. I mean, I will always go. If John's so playing locally, I'll go, you know?
Yeah.
Do you play locally, Dave? Let's do some
not
comparison
enough,
right
apparently,
now.
When you looked at my ticket seating chart.
but you told a story of
you're, anyway,
you just
you're
written
saying
a song.
Sold out show. What was it? Yeah.
You I'm surprised just you could song. Get a ticket, or you could even see him from where you were sitting.
Yeah. Well, he gave me a ticket. He gives his pastor tickets.
Yeah.
You told a story about I had just written a song, and then you were coming to help him move some furniture or something, and you like played it for him, Dave. And I knew who you were talking about, but you were like, you know, it's not good to have Grammy nominated artists, not Grammy winning, but Grammy nominated, like next door neighbor.
Yeah.
And so it was like. And what that did to you, like I was really proud of the song and then I played it for him and he was like, ah, it's good. But he didn't give you what you needed from it and what that spiral sent you into. I forget honestly what point you made in this.
No, my point was with that specific story was I knew the lyric was not great.
Yeah.
And he told me this lyric's not great. I went home totally defeated.
Right.
And I rewrote the entire lyric and now I love the lyric.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But. In those moments where the lyric in this example is the weakness, I'm insecure in that. And so if I came over, I played him that song, and then you played me some new song that you remember when first track off of Dave's new record, which is awesome.
It's a great song.
And the lyric
hadn't heard.
I've listened to it.
Don't do that. Don't you do that.
If I told you, if I would have listened,
what do I have to give you, Dave? I told you the
maybe a compliment. Go ahead, John. meanwhile, compliment Black Hole over here. You're just chucking him in.
I'm just sucking him in. I'm just pulling him out of him. But I would have that lyric to that song, which is great. Remember when you wanted everything you got right now? That would have hurt. That would have hurt to hear, because I would have been like, I wouldn't have been able to hear it and celebrate its existence. I would have only heard it in deficit of what I don't have.
That's so well said.
You know what I mean?
That is so well said. Man.
But so that's why all this to say, it's out of weakness. Ten times out of ten, it's coming out of weakness.
Yep.
Because if I had written a song that I think was great, then I could come over here in my security and abundance, celebrate what Dave has written.
Totally.
But it's harder to do that when I feel insecure.
I wonder if you guys feel this way, but it's so interesting. It's like these things that we're good at, right? Like, you have them, John, you have them, I have them. You have things particular to your career that you just don't struggle with, whatever they are. People listening, it's like, there's just things. And so what's fascinating to me is like, is that because we were affirmed so much in that thing? Or is it genuinely, you just kind of know, I'm going to stick the landing on this most of the time. So those things, your point, John, whatever they are, and I don't know why we have them. I don't know why that is. Like, there's certain things, if somebody came to a show of mine and critiqued, I would be like, oh, that's a bummer. But it really wouldn't bother me.
Right,
I'd be like, okay, well, I just didn't have a good night. If they critiqued other things, it could end me.
Yeah.
Same night, same show, same event.
Dude, yeah.
But different things happening at the same time.
Do you know what those things are?
Yeah, it's my legs. No, it's, I mean, it's a myriad of things. I mean, I think the strengths, so anyway, I think, so the point is, one, it's funny because I don't know why I feel as strong about it. It's not, maybe it's affirmation, maybe whatever those things y'all have that early on, maybe somebody just said, or you or just data. You just sort of learned after 10 times of doing it. Like that seems to just go really well. So I think, one, it's fascinating to me that I think everybody has those things. And there's just kind of always going to be these insecurities. Like, I don't know for me that the things that I struggle with will ever get to a place where I'm so confident in it that I will be like, it doesn't matter, outside of doing this weird grieving around them. Being able to mourn that I'm just not great at that thing.
But here's, man, and this is so good. We could.
Let me finish this off, because I think if I can square up with that weakness, stare it in the face, and go, I just, that's the thing for me. And every time, I don't know if I'm going to deliver, I'm actually free on the other side of going, that's just me.
Yeah.
This is me. Like, and if you love and know me, you're going to know that's just the thing.
Totally.
And then you can actually, I think then if somebody comes to the show and goes, hey, this thing was, I go, yeah, that's kind of in my set. I'm always, that's in my struggle set. It's always going to be a little, you know, and then it's not quite as.
And I think you're getting into capacity. So
that's exactly where I was going with it.
Yeah. Like, but I'm personally working some of this out, like as I'm talking about it and thinking about it. And, you know, if I had been sent this list, I could have thought about it some more before the show. But maybe that's a weakness of Dave's.
I'm riffing this, which is a strength. And so it's funny you go there, because this is just right off the top of my head.
Here's what's interesting to me. That set of strengths and weaknesses, though, at our jobs and vocations and our callings and all that kind of stuff, I've decided what list, on those list of things, what I'm okay being weak at and what I'm not being okay being weak at.
Yeah.
And to me, because you said, like, the more I can stare my weakness in the face and be okay with it, like, I can actually embrace the gifts and the strengths that I have and, like, go, yeah, I'm good at these and I'm always going to struggle with these, and that actually frees me. I completely agree with that. But there are certain weaknesses, like, that's maybe true of 8 of the 10 weaknesses that I could list off the top of my head about my job. But then there are 2 where I'm like, I'm so insecure that I am weak at those things still, that maybe I'm not fit for this if I don't get way better at those things. You know?
And what I was going to say is, I feel like some of the things that I think people might say are my strengths, I feel like they're my weaknesses. And that's why I maybe do better at them, because in my mind, I'm not as good of a player as I should be. I've been playing piano for 35
years. That is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, guys.
I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
But don't you think this is...
Wait, but that's for real. Let's name names. Not people. I mean, like, let's get specific. You really think that? Like, let the world into your... Like, between your ears, John McLaughlin can believe I'm not as good of a piano player as I need to be to do this job?
Yes, 100%. No, no, no. I'm good enough to do to get up on stage and play some songs.
Sure. You're not as good as you want to be.
I'm getting angry right now. Like, I want to combat that thing in your brain.
I think that this is, I assume this is a thing that people have. Like, it would not surprise me if, Elliot, you feel like I'm not great at delivering a message.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if, Dave, you feel like, no, I can't write a song. I can't write, but I can write a song, but I can't write this kind of song. You know what I mean? Because these are your strengths.
Yeah, that's good.
I know all the players that can play
better than
circles
you.
Around me. And I can feel in real time, I can physically hear my limitations as I'm playing.
Okay, you know what I think is funny about that, which is I want you to hear me say you are crazy.
Yeah.
I love you, but you are crazy. Two, I think the thing, this is so fascinating to me. So something that really helped me so much learning this outside of work was understanding that people who have a lot of empathy usually struggle a lot with anxiety. The thing that was fascinating about that tie-up is you realize that the reason that they have anxiety is because they notice so much. Mm-hmm. They're empaths. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the world, seeing the holes and the gaps. Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh my gosh, there's so much that can be done, or he's feeling bad and she's feeling bad. And, you know, to the same point, I think one of the reasons you're so good at preaching and communicating, that you're so good at playing piano, is because when you have a standard for that thing, it is so ridiculously high because you have the capacity to deliver at that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think anybody that I wouldn't be surprised if anyone who has a really strong gifting in something, and I think we all do, that thing is ironically probably something they're like, yeah, but still. And that's
exactly
why they're so good at it.
Right.
Is because they look at the performance of that thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like if you sit with, and y'all know this, you sit with any really remarkable NBA player, those guys aren't idolizing the guy who was the sixth man for the Mavericks in 96.
Right.
It's Jordan.
Right.
It's Kobe. Mm-hmm. Like, they aren't wasting, like, that is the goal. That's the summit.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go, that's something that always blew my mind with my friends who achieve in certain levels really highly. I'd be like, dude, great game, great show, great album. What? Thanks, man.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, why are you doing that? And it's like, well, because my standard is, you know, is woof.
And so what would ever, you know, because this came out some, to use a basketball reference, like this came out some in the Last Dance documentary on the Bulls a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good. But like, Jordan is still that way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, part of him, if he is the standard, he's still not happy with it. Like, he's so discontent now, like in real life, like he can still take things personally. Like, it's like, whoa, dude, your ego is still so fragile around this idea that, like, if that's real, what we're saying, which I think it is, like, I'm my own harshest critic because I have a high standard and Lord's gifted me in some things. Like, when does that ever stop? Like, when is it ever enough? So much to the point where, like, compliments don't mean anything. You know what I'm saying?
If you want to, So vulnerable. Let's get on the vulnerable train. I've never said that out loud before, but I just kind of like it.
Vulnerability train. Let's go with the vulnerability train.
Okay, great.
That rolls better.
Literally.
Yeah.
So when this new record came out, I've never worked hard on anything in my life. Like, I put so much blood, sweat, and tears in this thing. I was so excited to come out. The first two singles came out, and for my expectations, just didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get on any playlist for I mean, we did. Apple was amazing. Steve, my guy there, was so helpful. Spotify, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just frustrating because I had high expectations, right? So round one, it was kind of like, oh, I wanted more people, and like friends weren't really texting. And then
I did text you, bro.
You didn't.
I did. Don't the deconstruction
do that.
Song.
I did. Know, but that wasn't the first single, so you don't even know I put out singles. That's the whole point of this stupid conversation. No, but so
we're not even recording right now.
Yeah,
you have me here.
You're not going
to
make it.
Tell me.
This is a conference. Oh, we are recording, which is great, but I want people to hear how a pastor does when he's,
confronted.
Confronted. Because you get to confront, but guess who never gets confronted?
It's a weakness. It's why I always deal with it.
Comparison, capacity, and confrontation.
Yeah, there it is. If you hire Dadville, this is what we can come into your company and do for you. So when those first two came out, I was so disheartened, right? Now, some of that's because I just had ridiculous expectations.
Sure.
But a lot of it's because I worked really hard at something I was really proud of. It crushed me. Like, literally, I had to sit with Chad at Porter's Call and really just kind of be like, I know this is ridiculous. I'm a 45-year-old man. I've done this for 20-plus years, and it still bothers me. Like, this has really made me sad. His charge was, you've got to square up with this. Like, you can't do your little Enneagram 7 thing where you're just shucking and jiving your way into oblivion. We're paying, you're just, whoop, boom, miss you, ha, over here. Now I'm distracting myself.
I don't do that, but yeah I know other 7.
You're like, I'm just staring at you.
You ever looked at John yet?
Yeah. No, I haven't, because he's like, I'm well acquainted with pain. What are you talking about?
Seek it out.
Dive right in, bro.
Bro, this is the water I swim in, dog. But like, he just said, he said, when you feel that again, that sadness, I want you to literally sit in one of your chairs in your studio and just be sad. Just like, be really sad that like it's not going like you wanted, that you're in a 20 years in a career and that means a lot different than 5 years in a career, and all the things you're sad about, like, be sad. Totally. The thing that was beautiful about that is the other side, there was all this freedom. And I'm just now discovering this sort of new real estate of like, wow, when you really sort of let yourself realize these weaknesses.
Totally.
This is where I'm going with this, though. It was amazing. It's exactly what you just said. We had played a show in Philadelphia with Lady A, and the album had come out.
It had already come out?
It had come out that day. It was a Friday. People were just so effusive with their praise. And Words had told me, he's like, hey, because he saw this with his album. He's like, you might, those first things you put out that you think are going to be, everybody hears, it's probably going to happen when the album comes out. Because a lot of our listeners still want to hear the record. You know, the singles aren't, you know, whatever. And I just was so encouraged. And I'm telling you, as clear as I've ever had a thought, I had the thought, Lord, I wonder if while I prayed for encouragement on this, I'm getting it now only because I was humbled first. Because I think if I hadn't been humbled, I would have been like, well, yeah, it's good.
You would have needed it.
I busted my rear on it, you know? So I think any real realization of these things sadly has to come with humility. There has to be some into ourselves. That's where our weaknesses are so powerful, is because, you know, when God bless Michael Jordan, one of the saddest things I've ever read is that ESPN cover.
Oh my gosh, Wright Thompson.
15 years ago, whatever. It was like, it was Ecclesiastes all over again for the modern age. And I remember reading that article at me and so heartbroken, because it was like, this guy just hasn't been humbled in a way that he can square up with the things that he can't do anymore.
Totally.
You know, and maybe he has
it
now.
He did it in his Hall of Fame speech.
Yeah.
In his Hall of Fame speech, he came out and said, don't be surprised if when I'm 50 and 55, you see me lacing him up again and playing back in the league. And the whole crowd laughed, and he didn't laugh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was dead serious. Like, he couldn't let it go. You said something that, John, that related to something you just said, Dave, in this, like, being able to receive the compliment for the gift. And, like, you have to be humbled to receive it and, like, live into that. There's this thing, though, that Genesis 1 is kind of a there's a lot going on in Genesis 1, which we're not going to unpack all that. But God works. God is working. He creates, and then he calls his creation good with no audience. Like, he doesn't need other people to tell him that it's good. He calls it good. And so if we're made in God's image, there's something about that reality that we're thirsty for. What you said about art, the Rick Rubin thing, like, could I create something and then call it good? And then I don't need other people to call it good before I actually know that it's good. And then that's kind of what the place you got to in Philadelphia. Like, I know this is good and I'm okay that this was sad. It didn't meet my, like, the public expectations, but that's okay. I created a really good thing. So then when people affirmed it, you could just receive it. You didn't have to have it.
Yeah.
That thing to me is crazy. Such a, like when I preach a sermon and I'm not sure if it's good or how I feel about me in it and my, like, what's on the line when I get up there and do this. It doesn't matter if one person or everyone in the room says that was a good job. It's not enough. But if I'm already in a place of like Dave Burden, who's one of the pastors on Midtown staff, he kind of pastored the pastors all across Midtown, asked a question years ago that has haunted me. Like, how many compliments do you need after a sermon in order to feel okay with a sermon? And it was like, you start actually like staring that in the face, like your boy Chad was telling you, it's like, do I need every single person in the sanctuary every Sunday to tell me it was good in order to be okay? Or is it like, what if no one does? Or what if everybody does? Like, there's this, I have to deal with that. This is the comparison thing. Or have I just been faithful with what the Lord has called me to do with this task and and create it not for me, like you said, John, earlier, that Rick Rubin, like, this is for other people, so it doesn't really matter what affirmations about this I get. That's the only thing I'm aware of experientially and I think theologically that can quiet the comparison, is that if my identity is secure before I do the thing,
that's the thing,
then the comparison goes away.
Well, and I think too, that, which is part two of this first one, is the idea for capacity, because it's sort of imbued into this conversation. Right. It's like when you think, so the end of ourselves, there's nothing, the great humiliation of me and again, I'm speaking for men in a workplace, is this end of ourselves. This realizing that this guy right here, this frickin' guy, did the same thing I did and over-delivered. He did twice as well as I did.
Mm-hmm.
I worked just as hard.
Maybe harder.
That's great. Maybe even harder.
Right.
He just did a better job. Mm-hmm. And it's empirical data we're looking at.
Right, right.
He just did a better job.
Yeah.
And I think for me, you know, that is a terrifying journey of the heart and soul. When you start, and you know, I was going to say earlier, for whatever reason, when I think about my career, I don't think I did that from day one. I think I had this weird understanding for a while that like, how in the world do I compare myself to John or to Wirtz or to Rector? Because it's like a race where everybody starts at a different place.
Yeah.
And so it was wonderfully freeing for me for a while.
Right.
Because I was like, well, John's just John and Matt's just Matt. And I'm over doing it. But there was a very real day. And I don't know when it was. I think kids had something to do with it, where I suddenly started taking stock of myself because I never looked at numbers. That was just not me.
Right.
I was like, I'm just glad to be doing this.
Right.
And I was oblivious too. I'm not trying to make holier than that. It was just, I think I was flights of fancy.
Yeah.
But there was a very real day where all of a sudden I was like, I kind of want to know what I weigh. What am I worth? And boy, you talk about a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it is like, well, how'd they do? Well, what are they doing there? Then they have, and then freaking Spotify.
Dude.
You know, and that's what I love about Apple Music is there's no numbers.
Well, yeah.
But you know, you get on Spotify, the first thing is like, hey,
monthly listeners.
Look at your homie right here, man. And so for me, I think all of a sudden it became crippling.
Yeah.
It was like, because I didn't have the reps for it, I think. It's kind of a new thing in that space.
So let me ask, I'll ask a theological question again that can kind of bleed into some other things. This is where my mind's going is, If you have a problem in the comparison, and this leads to the capacity part, with how people in your sphere are doing better than you, metrically, successfully, whatever. And I'm literally trying to speak this as broadly as possible. Like, I don't know what it looks like for a surgeon to do this, but I know they do this. Like, real estate people do it and financial people do it and all, whatever. If you have a problem that Johnny worked just as hard as me or less hard than me and did better than me, then really what you're saying is I wish I had the gifts and capacity that he had and I don't.
Yeah.
So my anger is actually not with Johnny or the people you listed. It's with the Lord.
Here we go. Like, and then
I've got a problem with him that he didn't make me the way that I wanted him to make me.
Boom. Clap. Boom, ba-boom,
clap, chica, chica,
boom,
mm.
clap,
boom, strings, ba-boom. Strings,
John.
Strings. Piano, Dave.
Oh, that's how you write a hit right there.
Yeah.
If they're wondering.
Yeah, that's a little peek behind the curtain, people. Hey, Dave.
Hey, John.
What book on my bookshelf here has sold over 4 million copies? Can you tell me?
Okay. Is it your
It's not my memoir that I'm working on.
From your Indiana album?
Not 4 million. No. No, it didn't quite hit 4.
Wait. Is it my book of sheet music from probably any of my albums, maybe?
I actually don't know. I don't know the numbers on that. But both of those are on my bookshelf.
Okay.
I mean...
Just tell me. Just tell me what it is.
This bookshelf...
The suspense is killing me.
It is the Teen Study Bible, Dave.
TSB. Yep.
The Teen Study Bible. Yep. It's a classic.
Yep. I love the Teen Study Bible, TSB, on the streets, because it helps teens discover how God's truths relate to their lives today and helps them apply God's word to issues they face, like bullying, depression, peer pressure, and stress.
That's right. It features notes, articles, book intros, character profiles, Q&As, and more, offering the knowledge, strength, and clarity to navigate life's challenges with Scripture as your guide.
Yeah. Find out more about the Teen Study Bible and order your copy today at amazon.com/teenstudybible. Oh, man, John.
Dave, you okay?
Yeah.
Why are you squinting so much?
It's, it's so bright out here. I feel like I can barely see it. It's just,
everybody knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby. You know, here, try these.
Okay.
Try these knockarounds.
Oh, these are amazing,
right?
John.
Right?
I feel like these lenses have UV 400, which, if true, is basically like sunscreen for my eyes, but without the pain.
Right.
Without
and guess what, Dave?
Pain. Yes.
It is true. Because all of Knockaround's lenses have UV 400 protection.
What?
400. And now that the days are getting longer, you got to get yourself a pair, Dave.
Okay. I really want a pair, John, but these seem really nice. Are they going to break the bank? Be honest. Be honest.
Are they
$1 million a pair?
They're not. I need those back, though. But not a chance, Dave. With polarized adult pairs, they start at $28.
No, no, nope.
Yeah. And you can get a few pairs for $28.
Yeah.
Leave them in your car, toss them in your beach bag, or like I just did, lend them
Give them to a friend.
Such a great selection. I'm going to need that back.
So many greats. Over 20 different frame styles, tons of kids' pairs too, and I can rep my favorite MLB, that's Major League Baseball, NFL, that's National Football League, and NHL, which is not Hungry Lemurs. I don't know these for sure, John. Team with an officially licensed pair of knockarounds.
That's right. Dadville fans, don't squint through family beach days or trips to the park. Check out knockaround.com and use our code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. And what I love about this, which we talked about right before we recorded, and it has been such a helpful thing to me, is when we think about the parable of the talents, which is, to me, the gold standard for this conversation, right? One of the things that I learned this week that I thought was so unbelievably cool is two parts. One, that a talent that time would have been worth around $600,000. So immediately paradigm shifted.
Right, right.
Because it's not like he gave a penny to this one and five pennies to that one.
Right.
But you realize like God is, there's so much
wealth
and excessive wealth he has. So you are immediately worth so much, right? You're not just worth a talent. You're worth so much,
right?
Which is great. But two, which I think is just fascinating, is that whole parable sort of, you have to realize people just don't have the same capacity.
Right.
That's half of what that parable is about.
Right.
God, for whatever reason,
right,
makes some people crazy good at some things
right,
and you not.
Right.
And vice versa, you really crazy. And some people are sitting in the crowd at my shows like mad as crud at me.
Right, totally.
Like I am at some shows when I sit, I'm mad as crud. And I think for me, that is, you talk about a Adam level struggle for me with the Lord, like looking at him going, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and then, well, you're talking about some dark stuff. It's like, you know what I could have done with this for you, Lord? And he's like, I'm sorry. What? Like, what is that evil in you?
Yeah.
But I think like that is, I mean, for me, literally top three struggles is this idea that God, for whatever reason, just goes boop.
Right.
And you can, you know, do a job that makes you whatever money. This girl over here, she can sing. And every time she sings, it is game over.
Right.
This guy over here touches something and it turns to $1 million.
Right, right.
And God is like, yeah, I did that for my reasons that you may never know.
What was the line of the Remember When song that you praised him for? Read, say it again.
Right.
Say it again.
Remember When.
Let's end right here. I feel like this is a great
You wanted boost. Everything you got right now.
No, that thing, that line.
Yeah.
Is the antidote to what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it really is. Like, the secret of contentment is, Paul talks about this, like, the apostle, I mean.
Not McCartney.
Although he probably...
he probably wrote a song about this.
But there is a reality of, like, the humility to accept, Lord, you gave me this, and I'm content with what you've given me, not what I don't have. And so Britta, my wife, says this, it's kind of become a coined phrase in our house, because there's the old phrase, I don't even know who said it, it gets attributed to everybody from like Theodore Roosevelt to C.S. Lewis. And
We were just talking about this.
Yeah.
I looked it up.
Comparison is the thief of all joy.
Yeah.
Here's what Britta has added to that though, but sometimes it's the creator of it. Like if you, like, because I need to know my capacity, like sometimes I actually, that's where joy is realizing in comparison, my life is not as bad as like it could be.
Yeah.
And I have, in comparing, I actually find like, oh, but that's, this is what the Lord has given me. I actually need to compare some to a healthy degree, not to find my identity, but to go, oh, sometimes comparison can ruin my joy. Sometimes it can go, but it's, you, it's, you're okay with what you have.
Yeah. Right.
And so, or like my suffering, like, my life is hard. I'm not living in the Ukraine right now or on the Gaza Strip. Right. Where, and those are extreme, but it's like, hey, sometimes you might need a dose of comparison to realize what you do have.
Oh, my gosh.
You go, like, you didn't sell out, or maybe you ended up selling it. I don't know, but, like, the Skirma Horn for your Christmas show. Should I bring that up? How many times can we mention that? Yeah. It's a drinking game that we're playing right now. But, like, but you also weren't playing at Exit Inn.
Yeah.
You know, know what I'm saying? So, like, hey, dude.
It's scalable. The whole thing is always scalable.
Totally. And I'll just be really honest, get granular on my side with, like, this version in church world, preaching world, is when I started as a senior pastor at 12 South, Dave's, you know, neighborhood church that he doesn't walk to.
I'm an elder, by the way, at another church.
Oh, we've heard. I had to say it when I got
I'm so linked. soul tied.
But, like, there were, you know, X amount of people coming every Sunday. And then when I started and we grew, and now they're, and the number, the actual number, that's what I'm saying. The actual numbers don't matter. The benchmarks are like, if we could just get to this, I would feel like, oh man, we've done something. And then you do that first season and it's not enough.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then you, and then now we're at another X level and it's like, but that's not enough. So, like,
right.
Yeah. Why is more never enough? And sevens, you and me have to do this a lot, but this is human. It's not just sevens.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, how good at piano do you have to get, John, before you would
That's right.
I've finally, like, more is maybe never enough, which is where, anyway.
I'll say this really quickly. I heard you breathe, John, then I gave it to you.
Cough drop.
Oh, gosh. I think the two things I think about a lot with that are, one, like, that thing, whatever it is that you think is going to make you, like, the benchmark, right? Mm-hmm. I remember my dad telling me this early on. He was like, two words that will help you a lot as you struggle through this is, and then what?
Right.
Three words, sorry. Mm-hmm. Then what, whatever. But it's like...
No, I love that was the quote.
Hey, listen.
Hey, two words.
You can take the boy out of Mississippi, but you can't take the Mississippi out of the boy. But, you know, it's like playing
so
that.
Dad can't count.
He can preach, though.
He's wise.
So we see his weaknesses and strengths.
There we go.
But, you know, it is a funny sort of like brain game of going, okay, well, then what happens if suddenly you woke up with his or her powers?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just sort of realize, oh, this is the ever, it just never ends. It's never.
Right.
And therefore, and this is why, man, thank God for what we believe.
Mm-hmm. You and me, not John.
Not John.
You were looking at me when you said it, so yeah.
Yeah. But I think just to know that the only way out of this is to hear God tell you that you have value.
Right.
Just because he gave it to you.
Well, it's what he did in Genesis 1 when he created man and woman. They were very good.
That's exactly it.
It's like, this is true about us, too.
And I think that, so then you understand why when, you know, God tells us, like, how should we pray? He sort of says, daily, do this. Because daily, I need to remember, I need God's eyes on me going, like, you have value. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only from that space, only from that posture, can I ever navigate the world in a way that it doesn't crush me.
Right.
Because then when I go sit and see John play, and I'm like, good gracious, he can perform. I can then go, yes. Mm-hmm. Way to be who God made you to be.
Right.
Instead of me going, I must Highlander him and take his powers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's only in that way can I exist in the world, navigate the world with a backbone that's sturdy because God's giving me the backbone, not me going, I got to sort of justify who I am in the world every day to make myself feel good.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And then even more so than the last thought is then I can actually be who I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I can lean wholly into those weaknesses and strengths and actually as Elliot Cherry, go be Elliot Cherry like God made Elliot Cherry to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so when
he's
in that situation, he's glorifying God because he's doing that.
Yeah.
John the same, me the same. And instead of going, man, if I could just be that guy.
Right.
And God's like, well, no, there's already that guy.
Right.
You don't need to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I've got a lot of, I could talk about
John, you were going to say something.
Well, the thing I was going to say was, Elliot, earlier when you alluded to me at the piano and my limitations, I do feel like there is, like, I want to be clear, at least from my perspective, it's not an either or. I think that I think there is a healthy way to be. Like I am so grateful again. Just to use the example of piano for me, I'm so grateful for like the miracle of music and the miracle that is, and I don't say miracle like me on the piano is a miracle. I just mean like the fact that I can sit at a piano and make music, whether it's something I made up or something that someone 200 years ago made up. Mm-hmm. It is like, it's a miracle. Mm-hmm. It will like bring me to tears.
Right.
Just sitting at the piano. Yeah. So that is, and I'm so grateful that I, 41 years of being in the world, I've come to this place where I can just, it feels like just this miracle that always existed, and I get to like see it and be a part of it.
Yeah.
Just me in a room. Mm. So, and at the same time, I can 1,000% be aware, painfully aware of my limitations on the piano. And that's fine.
That's okay.
It doesn't have to be an either or. I don't have to eliminate all my limitations to then feel like I've earned the chance to
enjoy
experience
it. Right.
And enjoy music.
Yeah, I like, as a consumer of your music, to imagine, like, I feel like you, and I talked about this some in my sermon on Sunday. I know that Dave listened. Yeah.
I'm actually listening now with one AirPod in.
You remember. like, the role of the church in the world is to create beauty in the world.
Yeah.
And, like, when you play the piano, I feel like that's what you're doing for the world. That doesn't take away all of the either A, demons, or B, humility that you are currently wrestling with while you've created that beauty for the world. Like, it's not like you have to arrive at this place before you can actually enjoy it, is kind of what you're saying, is a version of what you're saying. But there's also like a, you're not, you maybe won't ever be totally free from it. And that's okay too.
Yeah.
Like you'll get, you like, you're growing in your gratitude. There's still comparison, and there's also the embracing of the limits. Like there's all the things happening at the same time when really like, but what the world gets experienced from you is the beauty you've created. I say that to say that it's almost like so much of this isn't and you spoke to this a ton, Dave, is it's just the internal dialogue between us and our demons or us and the Lord. Like in this, where like no one was having your experience of your singles release and you're wrestling with it. All of it, like the people that enjoyed it.
Yeah,
and that was, it's like, and so this, it just, it's such a, what we're talking about is so internal and such a spiritual, it's universal, but it's so like between you and your world and the Lord that, cause I just get to experience you playing beautiful stuff and writing beautiful songs. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, right.
I just find it fascinating. That's like to know that everybody's doing this, but not necessarily like involved
in
everybody's.
Well, I think too, that what that means is you stewarding it well.
Yeah.
It's not getting up at a before a sermon or a performance and going, hey guys, this isn't real great.
Right.
That's not a good stewarding.
Right.
Because sitting, listening to you speak or somebody sitting in the crowd, that's not what I'm called to do. And now it's affect their experience of that.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's like, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Another thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of skip here because the momentum is going. I'm going to follow it.
Okay. Love it.
I think something that I was laughing with John earlier. I think if I could stand up in front of, you know, a ton of like guys, men, working men, and somebody was like, you can say one thing to this crowd. I really think what I would say, because I need to hear this, is like, can we all just be okay with the fact that we overwork or we don't come home as soon as we could because the house is a hard place to be and work is the place that feels like you can control. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that and why I think it's such an important thing to say is because what I think happens for a lot of us, we're missing a chance to be honest with ourselves and with our male friends. And instead of posturing and going like, man, he works a lot and he's really killing it out there. And he was at the office till 8 tonight. Mm-hmm. Instead going, man, like, Can we just call it what it is? Like you stayed because you just didn't want to go home. And it was going to be chaos when you walked in the house.
Yep.
And I think, one, that work feels like control. Home, it is two opposite roles.
Right.
You run your little part of your work, whatever that is, be it your own business or you're working for somebody else, but you have your role.
Right.
And you achieve it and whatever. You go home as a dad, mostly you're just serving. You are... Mm-hmm. you know, for I think a lot of us, not everybody, but mom's kind of calling the shots at home, and you're here to help achieve whatever that vision is, right? And it is hard.
Jim Gaffigan, I saw a clip of him recently, said that husbands typically play the role, like on an NFL team, of a backup quarterback. Like, you're not going to win us the game. But when you get in there, just try not to fumble it. Okay? Just
keep the ball moving.
Just hand the ball off to the running back, and we'll all just say great job. And
That's it.
But only when you're called upon. No one's.
You can watch from the side and do a couple throws.
Encourage and celebrate.
Warm up.
Warm up. Be ready.
Be ready. That was part of the.
But if the quarterback gets hurt, we're all screwed.
And you get to wear the same jersey. You're kind of on the team.
You're on the team.
You can sit next to him on the plane.
Your jersey is squeaky white. Look how clean it is.
I think that's real, Dave. I'm intrigued, you know, a little bit for y'all. And John, I know you and I've talked about this because I get to hang out with you more than Dave. But
we have all those elder meetings.
Yeah.
There's so many.
It's like the nature of y'all's work. And I know we're trying to speak to universal work that people can say at the office and, you know, send another email, call another customer, client, whatever. Y'all are gone for stretches at a time where you go on 24/7 for 2 or 3 weeks. There's a version of that where you're like, you can't wait to get home on from some of those. And I've heard you talk about that. Like, I love my tours when I'm on them, but leaving is really hard because I know I'm going to be gone for so long. And I love being home. You really do.
Yeah.
The other side of that, though, is y'all work, y'all's offices is in your backyard. So, like, the accessibility that your family has to you during the day is a different challenge. I can't write sermons at home. I've told my wife this a thousand times. I try, and it's like, it's not just that they will be kind of coming and asking for my attention. It's more like I hear, like, oh my gosh, you know, so that's hard. That plays into sometimes, I'm not making this like Elliot's so innocent from what you were talking about, Dave. There's a version of not going home because, like, I know when I go home, I'm going to be, I'm not getting any work done, and I need to get, like, there are certain things that, like, if I want to be fully present at home, I need to knock these things out. A mentor of mine has told me before, like, every working dad and husband should think about their day that is a two a day. You have two working days every day.
Yeah.
Your second work day starts at 5:30. So whatever. Not because it's work and it's like a grind. It's like you need the same energy and focus and, like, meaning and purpose that you have for your office job. Like, so whatever you got to do to get ready for your second work day, you need to do that too. Like, you get up and you have coffee and you work out, like, to go to your first work. You need to have that same mentality going home. There is a version of that too, where it's like, I need to stay and work for another 40 minutes on this sermon, because if I don't, it's going to rob me from being present when I do get home. I'm not discrediting what you're saying. I'm trying to, like, when you were saying, like, I'm staying at the office late, sometimes that happens where it's
And there's seasons that
Only you know where,
right,
what's happening.
Yeah.
But I think that exactly what you said. I think where I find myself struggling, I've laughed with friends about this, like, you do, there is such worth to doing examinations, to doing regular sort of, like, okay, I don't need to be here right now. I just don't want to go home. I read this great article, which, what is it called? Where this pastor, I thought it was really beautiful. This pastor, it was on the Gospel Coalition, and this guy Chip Bettis wrote it. But he talks about this parishioner of his, basically, nope, that's not it. Wait, this parishioner of, I got to find the article. But the guy says, young, like, dad of an infant, you know, you're in the frickin',
man.
It's just, it's tough.
Only one in this room right now that's still in that right here.
Yes,
right here.
That was your choice.
Yeah.
So the name of the article is called "What If I Enjoy Work More Than My Family?" And this, it's really cool because this guy basically writes into his pastor and says, like, or I guess confides in him, like, "Hey, this is something I'm really having a hard time with."
Right.
And he handles it so well because he's like, one, let's celebrate a couple good things. One, you really enjoy work.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you have a job that you want to stay late and work on. Two,
Ecclesiastes would say that's rare.
Yeah, it is rare. Yeah, it's like very rare. And then two is that you find a sense of calling in that, and that it is productive for you, right? Makes you money. Then he also says, but let's also talk about a couple other things. And one of the quotes he had that I love so much is, he says, work is work and family is work. And so I think changing, to your point, that paradigm of going, oh, family is when I get home and I can relax.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Because I think what happens is that's what screws us up so much.
Right.
Is thinking, well, I tell you what, I don't want to go home is because it's not relaxing. And
right.
It's like, well, some of why you're having that struggle is because you're not thinking about it right.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you
yeah,
got to yeah. be ready to go home and engage
right,
and,
right.
and back up QB, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
even pretend you're doing something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think, I just feel like I don't want to digress too much, but I think that's one of the things that gets tricky too, is where the parable of the talents gets so misused, in my humble opinion, is men who would look at you and go, well, I'm staying there because I've got a gift that
right.
I have to really use.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go home early, I'm not using that gift.
Right, right, right.
And I think
it's like, we'll deal with that when we get there.
Yeah.
Like if that's the problem, that's probably not what we're dealing with.
But, yeah. but I think the other thing is that makes that conversation so interesting is I think where so many, honestly, I hate to say this, but like Western Christian men would mm-hmm. cite that to justify
right.
being gone, to mm-hmm. justify overworking. And
when really it's what you're saying at the beginning, like, guys, can we just call a spade a spade?
And that's really where
what
I'm
doesn't it
from.
Go back to what we were talking about earlier, though, too, about if I need my vocational production, whatever that is, to give me an identity, which then that always feels fragile. So I'm constantly comparisoning.
Let's don't have it. Let's take a break.
I'm looking for like glory or shame. All that whole conversation we were having earlier. If that's not settled and I don't know who I am, one dearly loved by Jesus, if I'm looking for an identity, I'm not going to get it at home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? You know
that's beautifully
so
said.
So it's like,
yeah,
that makes then like going home, if I'm more insecure, more fragile, more unsure of who I am and who the Lord's called me to be, I need work to produce something for me so I can feel better about myself and all that stuff. Then the thought of going home feels even more daunting.
Oh,
so
man.
Like, cause they're not going to give you whatever it is you think you're going to get at work anyway.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you do get some of it at work, man, you're really good at your job. Aren't you the best?
Well, here's your award for salesman
right, right.
of
yeah,
January.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You won the big bonus or whatever. And then you know you're going to get not that at home. It's like, well, then I would much rather.
Yeah, yeah. This know. Is.
Yeah, like it's not even.
True North is just over here
right,
now. It's just
right,
I'm always
right.
going to move toward that
so
direction.
To me, it comes back always, I think, to do you know who you are? Like,
yeah.
if you know who you are, then going home now is a joy because that's who I've been called to be. It is work, but it's
yeah.
a joy because I've been called to do this. I love my family. I love my wife. I love all that stuff. So it's like, if I don't know who I am, I'm going to be really lost at work. If I don't know who I am, I'm going to be really lost at home.
Mm.
So
yeah.
I think it's both. It plays out in both places.
Well, again, and you know, fascinating interview. It's funny. I just, man, this is I struggle so much with this thing, and it says so much about my insecurities and things in me, but like, you know, I listened to this really fascinating interview with Bruce Springsteen on Marc Maron.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark and he are talking about like, because you know, Bruce and James Brown are like the two icons in the music biz of like hard working dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like those guys put in a shift, they mm-hmm. tour, they like,
yep.
one of the reasons that Bruce is such an icon is because he's just like, he just grinds.
Relentless.
He's like,
yeah.
he's giving it to the, blew my mind. Mark is like, and I'm going to, everybody should listen to this interview because Bruce is such a thoughtful guy. He's such a wonderful artist. But Mark says, like, let's talk about that. And basically me summing up severely what he says, he's like, the stage is the only place that I control everything.
Oof.
And it is like, I'm sorry,
ooh.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about stop the presses because it's like, no, you do that because you love giving to them. And he's like, well, sure. But it is, I mean, he says that mm-hmm. as articulate as can. When I'm on stage, it is my world.
Oh, man.
I call all the shots. And suddenly, as someone listening to that, you go, one, boy, that demystifies a lot of things and sort of takes him down mm-hmm. a few pegs for me. Not in a bad way, but he just like me all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
right? But two, it really takes away from that thing of like, well, he's got a gift that he's using and he's giving
right,
it to
right.
people. That's how you want to know a guy that's been given a gift that's serving
right,
the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bruce. And he go, yes,
and,
comma.
Right.
I do it because it makes me feel really safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, oh, well, that's different than...
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you sort of lay that over a lot of our existences,
mm-hmm.
I think as men who work, it really screws up your bell curve. Because
right.
all of a sudden you're like, well, no, I want to be like these guys I idolize and leave it all in the field or whatever. And I mean, obviously we want to do the best what
mm-hmm.
we've got always, right?
Right?
But I think that is a metric we got to be really careful with. Because
if
that means that I'm standing in front of God someday and he's like, Dave, I made you to be funny and sing well and write songs and put
mm-hmm.
on and entertain people well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I lead
and
with. And yeah. and I lead with, I just have this strong belief that before we even talk about anything, he's going to say, like, let's, can I talk to your family? Like, that, you want to talk about one thing you know I gave you?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. None, you know I gave you. There is tons of empirical data on you have children you made with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to your work. Like, totally. You could have probably done a few things with that.
Right.
This, you can only do one thing. like, you can be a dad.
Well, and one of the things that your pastor, Dave, has shared with me, it's in his
shout
office.
Shout out Scruggs.
Yeah. Shout out Scruggs. Is that he has three things on his shelf framed in his office, the three sets of public vows he's taken in his life.
Mm.
Marriage vows, baptismal vows, and ordination, like pastoral vows. Yeah. He's like, if I ever need to know what I should be giving my time to, I've made public oths to like,
these, three
those three things. And the first one was my marriage vow. Mm. Like, that should be, that's my first one, you know? So, like, that I know the Lord has called me to. I don't have to wonder about, you know, how I should be spending my time. I've promised before God and man that I would be spending my time this way. I am in, I'm probably talking too much, but
no,
I continue to do.
Keep going.
Something that you said in the Bruce Springsteen story that was like, oh, that guy needs his work to give him a sense of control just like I do. Like that, it can kind of level the playing field, which is great. Speaks to something we've kind of hinted at, but like, not just the universality of it, but what we're looking for work to give us. And I know we've talked about Genesis 1 and you know, early creation, Genesis 1, 2, and 3. It's really interesting to me that work was in the garden.
That's,
meaning,
I was going to say that if you didn't. Keep going. I love that.
Were you
going
to say it too, John? Yeah.
Definitely was.
But like, in a perfect world, we were still made to work. So that guy, that article about the pastor, like, it's good that you love, like,
that's right.
You were made to work. That's okay.
Right.
It's interesting that if you go to Genesis 3, after the fall, sin enters the world and shatters all of it. When God's giving out curses to the serpent, the woman, and the man, the man's curses are all about his work. Like, he was made to do this thing, and now what's cursed is
not going to make you feel fulfilled.
Thorns and thistles. It's like the plows. It's going to be really hard. So, meaning your relationship with work is going to be skewed in this world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, vis-a-vis Bruce Springsteen. Oh, even you need work to make you feel a certain way, and you love being in your arena of work, literally and metaphorically, because of what it gives you. That's a broken relationship with work. That's not what work was supposed to do for you. Mm-hmm. That's not what we were supposed to do with work. And so, but just to acknowledge, we will probably never get to a place on this side where all that's totally settled, you know, and that's okay. Where like, you will probably always have a broken relationship to some degree of, I need work to give me something that it wasn't meant to give me, but we will work forever. Like that, the new heavens, new earth, like the restored creation hope of humanity.
That's right.
Is not that.
Yeah. We're not kicking our feet up in heavenly Aruba.
I've said in sermons before, and actually some people I have gotten a little hate mail for this, but that's okay. Our idea of heaven of like, we're floating on clouds playing harps all day sounds more like hell to me than heaven. That's actually not the hope of the world.
Right.
And actually in the restored creation, you actually having a non-broken, non-sin-stained relationship with work is part of what's going to make heaven heavenly.
That's right.
And
the curation.
Yeah. And like creating and forever to co-create and co-reign and co-make beauty forever, like, is part of what will be joyful, which is what we're all grasping for, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if doctors will have a job. I don't know if pastors will have a job. Like, there's lists produced of like, who won't still have a job, you know?
You're walking around like, Dave, can I take, I actually know everything you're about to say. Okay, thank you.
No, we're good.
Okay.
We're good. Do you know what Matthew says about?
I was just talking to Matthew about this.
I'm like, can I explain what Jesus meant in Sermon on the Mount? You're like, no, I was just talking to
Elliot, could you move Jesus behind you?
He was trying to explain what he meant. But like, you guys will still have your jobs, you know, like in the restored creation where it's like, oh, you still get to make beautiful things and you won't be in your head. You won't be looking for shame or glory like that. Doesn't that sound amazing?
The two things that as you were saying this made me think about this. The two things that I think when you know work is right, right? John and I have talked about this. When you're writing a sermon or speaking, whatever that thing, that part of your job, where you have lost yourself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You are
the
like
flow state.
The flow state.
The flow
you
state.
Are just like, you. And John said it, we were talking about meditation before you walked in. He was just saying, like, you know, that's one of the points of meditation is to get out of your head. It feels weird because, as you were saying, John, it feels like, no, you're thinking about yourself.
Like, but you go in to get out.
Totally. Yeah, you go to get out.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh.
But I think, like,
that's a song title.
I said that to him right before he said it. But, you know, so work around, like, one version that's really good. When, you know, like, this is me linked up. I'm like, me and heaven are...
Right.
We're linked up. Is when you've just kind of forgotten about yourself.
Unbelievable.
And right. And it's that can be on a spreadsheet. That can be booking a tour. That can be us making music, you preaching, whatever, right?
Right.
But you
one of our friends, Hunter Flint, he has, we were talking about spreadsheets. Just to further your point there, like, he has talked about the way he feels when he...
Yeah, this is what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't even know the terminology because I've literally never opened and done anything with a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it.
I'd be sinning if I didn't Excel.
Yeah, it would feel wrong.
Yeah.
Right. But when he's like, no, I make the formulas and then I make a spreadsheet and that helps some
all works out.
System work.
You hit enter and just like it fills.
Exactly.
Yeah, hit that, what that gives him.
He's standing shirtless in his front yard all of a sudden. You're like, what is he doing?
Sorry to cut you off, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, and I was good. So I think one is that. So we all know, like, and everybody's got, this is what I love about the way we are. Everybody's got a different version of that.
Right, right.
Hunter can look at me and be like, dude, today, you want to know what I did? I landed this Excel sheet. Everything when the bottom right pop, it was the number I needed to be right, and he really felt immense satisfaction that.
Yeah, well, pastors, doctors, and spreadsheets, none of those will be.
They will not be
in the new heavens. I hope there aren't any, or I hope they have cool colors or something. That but you know, I mean, one of the things that I think about, like when you were talking earlier, I was thinking when you said, like, on this side of it, we're not going to be able to experience some of these things, but I do think. I encourage everybody to be on the lookout for these moments that Hunter Flint was describing.
That's it. 100%. Yes.
Because we can have moments of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I do think when all is reconciled and...
Good word. Where'd you get that word?
Right? It was one of your... It was Sermon 57, I think. It's one of the ones that I think you wrote
been
at home.
Young.
You wrote at home.
I could tell.
You're like, you know, it's just like Paul Petrol. Oh boy, sorry guys.
But Bluey, Bluey,
Bluey, yeah. Healer told us.
But when all is reconciled, what I think will be really amazing is that because it will all come out of abundance.
Oh,
I think that who knows what it'll be.
Yeah,
that like it won't all be confined to. Like, I experience these things in this one specific lane because that's my identity.
Mm-hmm.
There's commerce is attached to it.
Totally.
Which is not entirely bad, but all of it underneath, all of it on this side of it is, to get back to Bruce Springsteen on stage, why he does so many shows and why he's been doing it for so long, is this level of control. And underneath that is needing to feel value.
Man.
You know? And the best way on this earth that I have experienced that, which for those listening who are believers and grew up in the church, you know, that's one side. To those listening who are not believers and don't have that element going on, my kids, having children is the most useful thing that could have happened on this earth to impact my faith. Because I'm like, if I just think of myself, the way that I view Luca and Livy, it all, I can't even talk about it without crying.
Mm.
It all is icing on the cake.
Like it hurts to think about how, like, it's painful almost how much I love them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know.
How much I love them, but also it makes you view the world it all looks so petty. I always think of this. I don't know if the line that connects these two things will be clear to everyone, but in my head it's so clear. I always think of this
spreadsheet.
This one spreadsheet that I had.
This one spreadsheet.
I made a spreadsheet about Paw Patrol one day. No, it was an interview with Ethan Hawke, and he was talking about Denzel Washington.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. This is so random.
Training Day, right?
Yes. He was talking about how Denzel Washington moves through the world.
Ooh.
And he was like, the best way I can describe it is, do you, you know, like the end of your senior year of high school? When you're walking through the halls,
bro.
And you, and he used some expletives that I'll leave out here, but he's like, you don't give a,
yeah. Yeah.
You're just,
yeah.
This is a random.
But that's how Denzel walks all the time.
That's how he moves through the world. And I have just, that made such an impact on me. This was years ago that I listened to this interview, and I'm like, this was before I had kids, and I'm like, there's something about that existence. That feels so the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then you have kids and you're like, part of what is so frustrating about being a parent is there's just no way that I can get through to my little 8-year-old daughter's head that like, it's all done. It's already done.
Yeah.
None of it is, do it all through abundance. Follow what is beautiful and awesome and worthwhile. But all this stuff, like, don't get up on that stage just to feel the control, just to just as some 2-hour respite from the scariness.
Man.
It's all done.
It's almost like that is what's actually more real than anything. That's real. Everything else is a facade.
Yeah.
Because it's like that's what we were made for. And so like when you taste that, that's real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like that's the most.
Well, and so the second thing I would say, point one being what we just said, two is service.
Yeah.
So when I start looking at my job as service, which sounds ridiculous musically, because you're kind of like, well, what does that exactly mean? But it means how can I write songs and perform? Oh, so writing would be, as we know, John, a way that people feel an escape from the world for a few minutes to nostalgia, you know, love for their kids because it's a song about kids, or just joy. Just that, like, gosh, my endorphins kicked in. I feel so much better now because this song is upbeat or whatever. Performance is that you just laugh. You listen, you cry, whatever, right? But if I can, one, stay in a flow state, to your point, that's a good place for it for me. Two, if I think of it as service. All of a sudden, it's not, the eyes shift outward. Instead of me going, is people going to think I'm cool? Or is this cool enough? Is this going to be something that people think is hooky? Is this going to make people come to shows?
So
and instead,
good.
I go, man, I hope that what I'm creating right now matters to people and helps them. It is like, woo.
Man.
It's almost the opposite sometimes. I hate to say it out loud, but it really does feel the difference between me going, staring at my navel and going like, is this going to make me cool to people, justify my existence in the music community, make people congratulate me, see me? And then the other, again, sadly, the opposite is like, man, Lord, I pray that this song, I think it's pretty great. I hope that people can listen to this and think about what it makes me think about and their kids or their wife or their...
Sometimes it takes that to get to the flow state.
Yeah, that's like, exactly right.
That actually keeps me in, and this is preaching. I'm sure there's an equivalent of it, but preaching, pastoring, leading, serving our church community in our neighborhood, you know, Dave.
It's so close.
It's so, I mean, it's it so literally is.
The Greek word for neighborhood means single lot. So really, it's hard to really translate.
That is entirely not true.
Well, it is to some of, I'm an
but
elder.
But the, like, the... There's just such a difference when I feel like I'm writing a sermon. Even I can creep into like, I have to teach these people something versus like, I'm with my father and my father's saying, hey, let's go show them this together.
Yeah.
Like, because I want to show them this and I'm just like using you, like you're coming with, it's like I'm working in the vineyard with my dad.
Yeah.
Like that thing, because, and he wants to serve these people. So, and I know, and y'all can have those versions too in music, I'm sure, but there is that, that's the flow.
Yeah.
Now I'm not, what are people going to say? Are enough people going to come? Is this, do I feel good about this? It's like my father's like laying out the feast and saying, don't you want to come help me serve this feast to these people?
Yeah.
Like we're going to do it together. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's the magic window. Someone sent me the clip from Inception, which is top five all time for me. It's like, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Where Leonardo DiCaprio, I forget his character's name. What, he's got a Dom or something. He's got a great character.
Jack.
Yeah.
Wait, what movie?
Inception.
All right. Not that. Okay. Sorry.
Not that.
Gregory.
Is he in other movies?
I think just those two.
They're talking about a dream state, and he's explaining it early on in the movie about, like, when you're in a dream, somehow your brain is creating the dream and you feel like you're discovering it at the same time.
Yeah.
And like that state is, and they call that, and they say that's what inspiration is. Like that place is where I feel like I'm creating it and I'm discovering it at the same time.
That's so great.
That's flow state for
that's
me.
That's great.
That can only happen if I'm seeing my work as something that is to serve other people. Mm. Like I can't wait to show people this, and I'm creating and I'm working, but I'm discovering it too. That moment is like, oh, I can't wait till Sunday to go give this away. I can't wait to go play this song. You also just said something about music in nostalgia, and sorry, my ADD is kicking a little bit, but it speaks to this. Guys, I was listening to a Dave Matthews song the other day, driving kids. I just dropped off kids at school. It was a song that I listened to in college, Space Between. It's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I listened to that like freshman year of college, and the power of that nostalgia, I was almost in tears.
Yeah.
Not because the song's so amazing. I mean, it's a fine song, but it came on and it was like, it took me back to a season of life that had so much nostalgia that I was like, mm-hmm. how did this song just do that? I was like, I was so grateful for that season of life. I was so like, so fun remembering like people and relationships and experiences and things, discovering the world. And I was like, not that I would tell Dave Matthews this, but I was like, I bet he was,
he's a big listener.
Yeah. But like, isn't that what you like, wouldn't he love to know a version of that? I would think what his song was able to do for somebody. That's what you're talking about. Like, I want to create this for people and that they would listen. You know, you've got songs. Both y'all have songs that would do that for me. Mm. Seriously. Not just saying that, where it's like, and God gave me you, probably not. Although that was our wedding video.
I love that you throw it away. And then you're like, it was the most important soundtrack.
No, I was
going to
say, Until You, original one, but also Grace's Amazing Hands. Like, like I can go instantly back to, anyway. So, y'all have done it. And when you see your work that way, it's so freeing.
It's so funny, too, because I think, I don't know if you feel this way, John, but I think some of why those songs... Obviously, it's some of our first stuff, so that's the first interaction with somebody, and that's why they...
Totally.
But there's also something, before you know what you're doing, that you can do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't going, I have a reputation. Totally. I didn't have anything.
Right.
So, you're creating from the space, and I always wonder if that's why some of those songs, for all of us...
Have that
thing, because it's...
One of the most, the strongest elements there about being early on... is like you're literally, I'm playing some A minor 7 chord, and I'm like, I love the way that sounds. Yeah. That sounds cool. Now when I play it, I've played an A minor 7 chord 9 billion times.
Yeah.
And I've heard my voice do that thing 9 billion times.
Yeah.
But early on, it's like, it all sounds kind of new.
Yeah.
But I think that what creeps in now is it still comes from that insecurity, because it's like, well, I got to reinvent myself. I got to, or whatever the thing is. Man. It doesn't have anything to do with like, the voice is still the voice. The piano is still the piano. The guitar is still the guitar. But it's the insecurity that poisons the water for it a little bit. You know what
like
I mean?
Like you're tired of it, but that doesn't mean the people that they're listening to it are tired of it.
Right.
Well, and it's not even that I'm tired of it because of an insecurity that I have.
Right.
I don't know that if you take all that out and I'm just operating out of abundance, I don't think I'm tired of it anymore.
That's so good.
You know what I mean?
That's so good.
Especially if you know, I mean, I think that's why it's so beautiful hearing you say that, which thanks for saying that. But it's like when you have someone who can really square up with you and be like, can I tell you how much that song means to me? Mm-hmm. And you really feel the weight of it.
Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing I want to do than grab a guitar and play it for you.
Totally.
Yeah. It's like, right.
Well, that's amazing. Right, that's why I wrote the song. You know, it's like, and that's not about me at all in that moment. It's about like, can we kind of share this cool moment together where I can provide this thing for
you?
So, I mean, I think there is something really beautiful about that. And I think, you know, I love what you said. I think the again, service, how do I, it's not about me anymore. Flow state, how to your point, how that kind of serves
and,
the other.
Yeah, it frees me to like create and discover, because like my identity's not on the line, my reputation's not, my expectations of me are not on the line, like all that stuff that.
But you know, all of that is exactly what we've been talking about.
100%.
Like you just said that so well. My expectations of me aren't that high because I have humility.
Right.
Two, I don't connect this stuff to my worth.
Totally.
So nothing's on the line.
Nothing's on the line.
Right. I'm secure.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I do here is gravy. And it can fail.
Right.
And it's like, oh, that's, oh well.
It can just be whatever it's going to be. It doesn't have to be something. It doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be, you know, bad. It doesn't have, it can just be.
And there will be listeners, I would imagine. I don't know y'all's like demographic. I haven't looked at y'all's metrics. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to. I'd like to see.
John has an Excel.
Laminated Excel sheet.
He did. His one Excel sheet was this.
Yeah.
But some people will say, well, man, that's great that you get to sit around in your back studio and like just dream and create and make beautiful things. I've got to get up and go to a job that I don't even like.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't ever feel like I'm in the flow state because I'm just doing this to make a living.
Right.
And so there is like, this creates a lot of gratitude in me. This is where like comparison can be the producer of joy. Sometimes it's like, I'm so thankful to have a job that I get to think about this thing.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, I'm not having to like look at spreadsheets all day. I'm so thankful the Lord has called me to this, but I know there are people who are like, man, y'all, that's great that in Nashville, y'all get to sit around and just talk about all the hard parts of your job where you have to like create beautiful things. And it's hard sometimes. It's like there, I know there's people who work is really hard and they don't get this thing. And which further proves what you were just saying, Dave, which is, but if you need your work to tell you who you are, then it'll never do it. Whether you get to create and get in the flow or not, it's like your work's never going to be able to give you the identity you want anyway. And so regardless of that, I think that it's important to say these things are true.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to come from work.
Right.
It doesn't have to come from work.
Right, right. Totally.
You don't have to have a... I remember talking to Amy about John Mark Comer's... I think it was Garden City. This was a while ago. Because she loves that book.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I presented this idea of like... You know, he's, I think he's kind of saying like, we're meant to work and create. And she was, I don't want to butcher what she was saying, but she was like, well, hang on a minute. You know, like I don't have a job outside
Totally.
The house.
Right.
So to your point, like, I don't want anyone listening who, you don't have to get this fulfillment from your job necessarily.
Right.
You know,
in preparation for a sermon I preached recently about this, about creating beauty in the world, being ministers of reconciliation and reconciling the world is what the church has been called to go do, 2 Corinthians 5, and to be ministers of beauty, basically, like to reconcile the world to how it was originally intended. Mm-hmm. That's our job as the church. And that doesn't, that could be your vocation, but your vocation may not pay you anything. It may not, it may just be like where you've been called. One of the things we didn't get to in the sermon that Joseph Patton, my worship director, and I got, had so much fun talking about, and this comes from Kurt Thompson stuff, but Soul of Desire, his, you know, he talks a lot about just the need for beauty and how we were like made to long for beauty and how literally like just the act of creating something, what it does at the brain level, whether that's like baking brownies, whether that's, he talks about like coloring with crayons with your 5-year-old is like what it does to like the attunement side of your brain, like keeping you in the present moment for something and how like just creating, like you should, he says you should place yourself in the path of oncoming beauty at least 2 to 3 times a week. And some of those things should be beauty that you create. And that, but that doesn't mean you have to go paint an oil canvas. That could be like, I like picked flowers and made a bouquet. Like I created something and that beauty gave me the enjoyment out of the abundance of like, look at what I just got to do. That thing is, it doesn't have to be tied to your job.
And that can be, and I'm thinking of my wife right now, who this is not, she's not limited to this one thing, but this is just one of her strengths where I feel like one of the things that she so naturally creates is safety for, with another human
for
being.
For people, yeah.
Empathy, safety. She creates a space for someone in a conversation to feel
seen,
valued and seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I mean, what could be more important than that?
Nothing.
You know?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so
the thing
I don't think that we should limit it and box
1,000%.
It in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think that the way that, I don't want to sound all anti-capitalism here, but we live in America in 2024.
Right.
And commerce and work and productivity and GDP and all that. I mean, that's just the water we swim in.
Mm-hmm.
It's very far from like the early church.
Oh my gosh.
Who, you know, so I don't think, I think on the other side, I'm not sure it's going to be set up this way.
Oh, I mean, kingdom vision for me, it's like the, I'm like, it'd be hysterical if Jesus could come down and give me, like, you know, they give you the movie theater 3D glasses. And he's like, I'm going to give you 20 seconds
to see the world the way I see it.
Because it's going to blitzkrieg your brain. And just put them on and look around. Just stay wherever I am and just do a 360 to see what God is seeing and the commerce that God is seeing. Because I think, like, what you're saying about Amy, you know, I would imagine God's like, oh, this is a different thing. I love your songs, Dave, but her creating a sacred space for someone is worth like a million bucks.
I mean, that's
bucks.
That's what the Sermon on the Mount is. Let me tell you how I see the world.
That's exactly
and how
right.
none
that's
of
exactly
it
right.
is what you, exactly you know, right. have you considered the lilies?
Yeah.
Like, have you seen the sparrows? Like,
Like,
that's what I'm thinking about.
That's what I'm thinking about, And are you not much more valuable than that? It's like, there's just a, he would only be able to let you and us do that for 20 seconds.
Oh, because it'd just be so mind-altering.
Because we'd probably, we'd either, like, jump off a cliff or, like, burn our houses to the ground or, like oh, then none of that.
Yeah, then sell everything and I'm, you know, going to join a monastery or whatever I got to do. Well, I think we figured it out. Do you feel like we figured it out?
I feel like we figured it out.
We didn't even get to all my points because we just were figuring it out.
Yeah. I think that you just, when you just said kingdom, though, this will be the last thing I say. A theology of the kingdom, and I know that not all the listeners are believers. But if you call 1-800-JESUS,
that's it. You'll come down to Midtown, Nashville.
I really want to call 1-800-JESUS right now. You've called it.
Yeah, I'm on the phone.
When you just said, like, if you were raised in the church, this is not the way we were raised. There's just an element to me that this conversation. I've got amazing parents and they did amazing jobs and my youth pastors changed my life. Like, I'm thankful for my life in the church growing up, but it's discovering some of this as an adult. I'm like, where was this? Where was this? Like, I think a kingdom theology as it relates to work, what God is doing in the world and has been doing in the world since he created the world and what we were put here to do and like who we are because of him. Like, all this that we've been talking about is like, oh, that's worth my life.
Well, and this is, watch this. Watch me try to wrap this up. I think that's why I feel so strongly about it.
Yes.
Growing up in the church, and again, my parents, my dad exhibited work in some beautiful ways to me. In fact, we talked about that last episode. So mine is not that, but I do think you couldn't escape this feeling of this is what a good Christian man does. And that means work his tail off. Mostly, not mostly, but at the expense of his wife and family a lot of times, so that then we can all kind of as dudes get around and be like, dude, you're killing it out there. And I'm like, anything I can do to stop that, I want to be a part of, because it's just not, it's antithetical. It's not what we believe.
And I'm kind of hypocritical saying this. There was an era and an aroma in my, you know, church upbringing too, that was like, well, it's fine if you're a banker or a lawyer or whatever. If you're not doing ministry, work doesn't really matter. And that to me is like, oh no, the local church actually can save the world because it can empower people to help them believe wherever I've been called is kingdom work. That to me, not because I might go to my clerk's office, you know, cubicle and share Jesus with everybody. Like, maybe, but like, you were sent there to do something to bring beauty to the world, to reconcile it, like, because the kingdom is coming. That to me, like, the hierarchy of vocations, I think.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, and that's why I get really passionate about it.
Other than musicians being, I mean, it's at the top. Because it's going to be in heaven. And we'll, listen, I want to be, we'll be there for you then. If you're looking for something.
Could I be, what could I do for you? And how could I work for you in heaven, you guys? What could I do for y'all?
I mean, I guess we'll do like pick-up basketball games. Kind of organize those.
I'll probably be singing while people play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, great shot. You know.
Do you think you'll need like a roadie? Do you think you'll need, or like road managers?
No, because I think streaming services up there are going to pay more. I won't need to travel as much.
Could you imagine?
The guy who just made fun of capitalism.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy who just poo-pooed on.
Yeah, you can't escape it.
Yeah,
can't escape it.
Guys, I was honored. That was fun. I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, amen.
It was great. Amen.
It's good.